is the Kuali OLE, Deep Library Collaboration, and the release of a community-sourced library management system. Before we get started, I would like to ask those of you in the room here if you would be so kind as to make sure that cell phones and other devices that ring, buzz, otherwise make noise, are set to a passive or off position. And if you would please be sure to fill out your evaluations for this session. It means a lot to the presenters, and it is used to evaluate the quality of the program. The Kuali OLE partnership began with funding from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation, and it is now in its second year of a two-year project to build the community-sourced library management system. In this session, your presenters will be focusing on the deep collaboration, shared governance, and process innovation that the partnership of these universities that are investing in this application is leading. Today's speakers are Robert McDonald, Associate Dean for Libraries and Deputy Director for the Data to Insight Center, and Michael Winkler, Director of Information Technology and Digital Development. Robert is at the Indiana University Bloomington, and Michael is at the University of Pennsylvania. And with that, Robert, over to you.
All right. Thank you so much for that introduction. So we're broadcasting online today, so we have an audience in front of us and an audience out in internet land. So we're trying a few different things here today, and so if you've got computers with you, you might want to try it out. My name's Robert McDonald, and I'm with Indiana University. This is Mike Winkler with the University of Pennsylvania, and we both have been working with the Kuali Open Library Environment for quite a while. We've got our slides online if you want to follow the SlideShare link there or the QR code, and you can just follow those on SlideShare right on your device, on your phone if you want to. You can also tweet about us today using the EDU12 tweet with our Kuali OLE hashtag. And the new thing that we're trying out here is not so much the SlideShare, but we created an engage page so that everybody out on, especially in the online environment, could go into an open Google Doc, and there's a spot there to type in questions as you go along or notes if you want to provide feedback on the session. That'd be great. And we've got that there in a QR code as well as in a Bitly link if you want to follow that along. And we tried this with a recent conference we were just at, and it worked out pretty well, and I thought that'd be fun, and nobody has to have an account to get there. You just go there and get in and type your questions, and we can watch that, or you can tweet them straight to those hashtags, and we'll be watching for that. So as we get to questions, we'll try to follow up with the online group as well as with the group here in person. And I also wanted to mention, I know a lot of you, as you came in, I gave you the Kuali Foundation cards. The Kuali Foundation reception's tonight, so bring that with you, and please come to our reception at 6:30. It's over at the Hyatt, and if you didn't get one, John Dunn's got some more back here. He's from IU. See him, and he'll give you one of those cards if you need to know the directions. So a little bit about today's talk. We're not talking so much technology today, but more about the collaborative community development story that goes along with both the Kuali Foundation as well as with Kuali OLE. I'm going to talk a little bit about that development and how we built that community for OLE. Then I'm going to talk a little bit about how we refine that into what we're talking about as a collaborative community. Mike's going to follow up that with a little bit about our foundations and our architecture and our technical underpinnings, and a little more about how we realign that to really build a software development collaborative community. Then he's going to talk a little bit more about our supporting collaborators and how we're working to get toward a sustaining level once we get our gold release out the door. And then he's going to talk a little bit more about the ecosystem we're working with in the Kuali Foundation for Vended Services. And then I'm going to follow up with a little bit more about long-term investment in the community, not just in terms of cash investment, but in terms of contributed people investment and where that's going and where that knowledge is being invested in terms of Kuali OLE. And a little bit about some of our current opportunities for global partnership that we're looking at with Kuali OLE. So I did this nice little picture to kind of show you a little bit more about our journey, where we started out from. We started out as the OLE project, and that was just a planning project that was funded by the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation. We had about 25, 30 different libraries, and then we... Oh, that's interesting. I thought we had a soundtrack for a minute. How we built that from a planning community and a community that was really engaged, we reached out to a pretty wide international audience to provide input on that build project. But what we were looking for there were the common needs. We were looking for the common needs that libraries have for managing their business engagement and for their long-term supply chain lifecycle, working with mainly our e-content vendors, although several of us still buy lots of printed stuff as well. And how we built that into a build community that wrote another grant to work on our build out for the project. And how we took that and developed some technical foundations for it and built that toward what we're calling here a collaborative community for software development. And then that refined a little more, and we're working it toward more of our shared services within our current Qualia Lake partners, as well as some of our early engagements on global partnerships. And we're working toward really refining that Qualia Lake as a collaborative community. And just to give a little nod here to all of our partners who couldn't be with us today, as you can see, we have a rich wealth of academic research libraries that are involved. I'll say them real quick: Duke University, Indiana University, Lehigh University, North Carolina State University, Villanova University, University of Pennsylvania, University of Michigan, University of Maryland. A really large contingent of about 8 universities in Florida that are led by the University of Florida, but includes the major state universities there, as well as University of Miami and Rollins College and the University of Chicago. And of course, we're working under the rubric of the Qualia Foundation, and we have funding still from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation, which has really made our projects possible. So when we look at community development, we talk about kind of 4 tenets of that. A shared vision, and in this case for Qualia Lake, we've refined it down to that software development for library business practice. That's really the scope here. The knowledge component, reviewing and choosing our models for collaboration, and Mike's going to talk a little more about this later, but really about this kind of disruptive model for libraries to work across institutional and state boundaries for really making that collaborative model work. The effort, our functional council is the group that really governs the drive and scope of our software. Our subject matter experts, which number in the hundreds now from across all of our institutions, are the folks who do the really hard work of putting together our specifications that are then delivered to our software developers to return that into a product for us. And the openness, not only the openness of our intellectual property and the fact that our software is open source, but the openness of the community so that all of the leveraged work that the subject matter experts and what we tend to call people working as business analysts from our business side of libraries put into the effort. Because if they were working with a commercial product, they would be working just as hard to refine that product to work with libraries and to make that product better and better. They're doing the same thing within Qualia Lake and refining our product to make it better and better. But that knowledge is staying within the community. So a solution that I write with my resources at IU can be easily adapted to be used by the University of Pennsylvania or Duke or someone else. Yeah, and I need the water, I think. I got something caught there. I want to bring up an article that just came out from our CIO at IU, Brad Wheeler, and the CIO at the University of Virginia, James Hilton, because we're going to reference a little bit of it today. Not a lot of it, but I think it's definitely worth reading if you're interested in looking at this matrix in particular. The article is titled The Marketecture of Community, and I'm only going to talk about this matrix simply because of where we feel we've refined ourselves over the last 2 or 3 years with Qualia Lake into that collaborative community, kind of up there to your right in the corner, where we feel, you know, that's kind of where we're fitting now, because so much of our actual decision-making process and our deep collaboration across our institutions is really driving that. It's not a cooperative like the sector below that, where, you know, to me, a cooperative in this standpoint is more like an R&D cooperative, where several companies would work together, say, on certain types of standards, maybe a type of laser standard for video playback or something like that. We're actually making strategic decisions across the institutions, and that's where we feel like we fit into that collaborative community component. Now, of course, the other side of that is really interesting in this matrix, in that it's a buying club, and if you're familiar with libraries, how many people here are from, work with libraries, understand more about that business model? Great, great, it's a library audience, awesome. So you already understand that whole model about how we come together around things like JSTOR or HathiTrust, or how that fits a little more with things like purchase contracts that are consortial related to buying things from commercial providers like Elsevier or EBSCO. But today we're really going to focus on the collaborative community sector and how we feel we've refined Qualia Lake into that sector and what we see going forward with that. This is the definition from that same article on communities of collaboration, in that where participants in communities of collaboration embrace intentional interdependence as instrumental to their individual success. Mike's going to talk about that in terms of our decision refinement for long-term goals, in that we always think, you know, first locally, that's what everyone does, right? You know, all politics is local. But that next sector that always comes up is, how does this affect our partners? And then we take a look at that within the time frame, the rubric of our resources, our time frame, and so forth, and look at what that decision would be made. And most of the time, it's really an expedient kind of delivery option, expedient kind of collaborative decision-making process to move forward. These communities of collaboration are built on principles of shared investment and coordinated action to achieve mutually desired outcomes within a known period of time. And as you just saw from the four tenets that we had looking at this in terms of our, and I'll go back to that real quick, our shared vision, our knowledge, our effort, and our openness, that's what we're talking about here today when we talk about our community of collaboration. And then when we look at our decision-making process, it's always through what's a long-time historical piece of the Quali Foundation, the reality triangle, the resources, the time, and the scope. Now I'm going to turn it over to Mike, who's going to tell us a little bit about the beginnings, fundamental plans for the technical architecture and how that relates to sustaining our community in the current trends of library automation today.
Great, thanks. Thanks for joining us today. Again, our focus is really on how our community has been important to the process of developing the software. Over the years, we've given many, many talks about the technology that we're using, our timeline, and even done demonstrations of the software as it has been developed. But we've not spent as much time talking about the strength of our community and how that really is sustaining what we're doing. So we wanted to cover that some today. And this is going to be a little historical because we've morphed over time as our focus has changed during the project, but also as we've learned how to become a collaborative community. So we started out thinking about our architecture, and we knew enough to say, well, we need to get functional specialists involved right away. They need to be thinking about what is it that is Quali Ole? What is it going to do for libraries? What's the scope of it? And to describe that scope in some ways, at least at a high level architecture, so that we could begin considering doing some research and evaluation of technologies that might be important there. What's the problem space we're in and how are we trying to solve it? So we had functional scope and definition groups that helped us think about the major functions of libraries, and we defined them as select and acquire, describe, deliver, and the relationships between materials, people, collections, libraries, universities, courses, and the higher education process. With that as a foundation, we began doing research on the technologies we might use, and that included, because we were joining the Quali Foundation, really taking a deep dive into their technologies and trying to understand what is it that Quali Rice did for us, which is the middleware infrastructure that the Quali Foundation provides to all the Quali projects. The Quali financial system, we were thinking, you know, a big piece of what libraries do is acquire material and manage accounts. If a financial system had already been developed, why would we develop another one? But we wanted to do a deep dive and understand whether it really did meet the needs that libraries have, because we do have some unusual needs for accounting. So we spun off a group and they looked at that. They came back with a report that said about 90% of what libraries need to do in terms of accounting would be covered by the finance system. So we adopted it as a base technology. We also needed to think about how we were going to represent our data, how were we going to persist it, and we wanted to make some decisions that gave us some flexibility down the road. So we tended to think more of our metadata and our data as documents rather than as rows in a database. So we looked at the Apache Jackrabbit software, which is a document store. And then on top of that, we wanted to be able to index and discover, have a discovery layer so that you could find the material that was there. But all of this is through the lens. We didn't want to create the same systems that we were using from commercial vendors. We wanted to make sure that what we were doing was going to be relevant when we implemented, but relevant beyond that as well, and that it could change and adopt and adapt as the environment changed. So we also did an analysis, an environmental survey, really trying to understand what are libraries, what are the risks and challenges that libraries are facing now, and where are those likely to go. So through that lens, we were able to take the functional scope that had come from our functional specialists, what is it that the Qualio Lake software is trying to solve, and we also had our technologies that we wanted to use that had reasons that came out of the unique characteristics of the way libraries work, and we put that through the lens of those risks and challenges that we see coming down the road, and we ended up with our architecture. The point here is that it was a very community-oriented process. We really needed to work together. We needed to understand that those risks were relevant to all of our partners, that the scope that we were defining also had meaning to all of our partners, and that the technologies that we were going to use were not just accessible to Research One libraries, but could be really implemented by a wide range of academic and research libraries. So after that analysis, after that lensing that we did make our architectural choices. And important here is a service-oriented architecture. We really wanted something that we could swap out pieces. We wanted some isolation between the kinds of functions that would be represented in the software. As I had said, we had done good investigations of the Qualy technology stack and chose Qualy Rice as our middleware. The KRAD system, which is the Qualy Rapid Application Development System, is it's a web-based workflow and interface tool. It allows you to create web presence and tie it to workflow and the rules engine that is part of Qualy Rice. So that was a critical piece for us to be able to isolate our workflows, really use a process language in order to describe them, and then cast them out into the Rice infrastructure. We also needed a way of managing identities, and if you know anything about libraries, they are inclusive organizations. We tend to try to find ways to include people who aren't necessarily part of your parent organization. We collaborate with other libraries for resource sharing material across consortiums and partnerships. So it was important to have a very flexible identity management system. We have within our partnership consortiums where there are 8 or 9 libraries involved, each running their own identity management system. So we needed some way of federating that using the Qualy identity management system. The finance system, as I said, we found that it was very capable for doing the kind of work that we needed to do in libraries around finances for acquiring material, for paying for it, and for doing fund accounting and those sort of things. JackRabbit is the document store that I talked about, and it's a bit of future-proofing because it really just looks at documents as whole objects. So you can take your metadata as MarkXML XML and you can put it in there, or you can put Dublin Core in there, or really any kind of structured data could go into it as times change or as our standards change. But the other thing to consider is that the warrant of libraries is increasing. 10 years ago, we wouldn't have thought so much about being repositories of material being generated by research at our institutions. But data sets are becoming things that libraries care about. Repository infrastructure are things that libraries care about increasingly. So there's new kinds of business that libraries need to manage, and we needed to be able to accommodate that within our system. And then Solr is a system that is used for indexing and discovery. A little bit of a misspelling there, but it is very familiar to libraries. It's something that many libraries are working with natively or through products that they've acquired for building discovery systems for their public. So we thought that this would be attractive to libraries as the staff interface. It would be familiar, and it would be something that they could tune over time as well. So I want to. So we made those decisions about architecture, and we made those decisions about our basic scope, and then we went into this startup mode. We really needed to start thinking about how are we going to organize ourselves to get functional specifications written, to understand what it is that we were trying to do. So we kind of changed our organization a bit. We wanted to find a way of getting specifications written, and we hit upon this idea of tiger teams. The idea was, and you'll see where I'm going with this in a minute, is to take a small group of people, of functional experts, and put them into a box, and let them just come up with pieces of functionality, descriptions of functionalities. And that's what that Tiger Team set of operations are there, is that really that they were not looking at the whole elephant, but pieces of it. And they could go very deep into detail to describe what those functions were. But we started finding that this wasn't a good organization. We kind of thought that this would give them the freedom to not be concerned with a large set of software, but to focus very clearly on very well-defined pieces of functionality. The structure that we ended up with was somewhat hierarchical, though, that the Tiger teams would produce these functional specifications, they would be reviewed by our core team, they would be handed off to the developers would then try to understand what it was that they wanted, that we wanted from them, they would produce a set of questions, mostly, and not so much code. So we were really finding that our velocity of production wasn't what we needed it to be. So as a community, we came to understand that. One of the things that I've learned from this process is you really got to leave your ego at the door. This isn't about you. This is about what's good for the organization, what's good for the community. So we decided we needed to change up, that we needed to put the functional experts much closer to the developers, and in fact, talking to them on a daily basis, and talking with the lead developers from our contract programmer, HTC Global Services, and let them have a conversation about this is what this module in general is going to do, and then we're going to produce specifications that talk about this piece of functionality that we're going to need, and it's related to these other pieces of functionality that you're already working on. And it gave a more holistic view, not only to our functional specialists, they could see bigger parts of the system, but the developers themselves started having a better understanding of what it is that library software really needed to do. So the communications really was the critical piece. Being able to change up and make those decisions as a community was just fundamental to significantly increasing our velocity for code production. So now we're seeing code come out as quickly as specifications are generated. Our developers typically are turning around code matching specifications in 3 or 4 weeks. There's a review process that is done by the same people who did the specifications and then an acceptance process. But it's very tightly coupled communications between the developers and our functional specialists that have made the difference there. So now we're writing code. Now we're getting code written, and if you go to the Kowali Olay site, you can actually use that site to do a test drive. It is our latest released code, which is 0.6, but we're working very hard towards 0.8 now. So we're going to continue developing our software over the next several months, but even with that, we've begun thinking about what happens now. Now that we've kind of figured out how to get the software written, we need to start thinking about how do you take software and then implement it in our partner institutions. So what you're looking at here is just sort of a generic graph of what libraries look like. They tend to have integrated library systems that take care of a bunch of functions for libraries that we understand relatively well, those of us in libraries. And then there's a whole bunch of integrations that you have to do, and this is not all of them. But you have to integrate with these other systems, some which are run by the library, some which are run by the university, some which are run by third-party vendors or bibliographic utilities that are out there. And then more recently, many of us have started implementing discovery tools that sit on top of our traditional catalogs and give us next-generation functionality, really, for discovery, faceted search engines like Solr that I mentioned earlier. Meta-searching has become critical, being able to search across large corpuses of information, not just your catalog, but article indexes and databases and other kinds of materials that libraries provide for users. And then many of us have consortial borrowing systems, which end up looking very much like discovery systems because their primary function is to let users find out within the consortium is an item available, and then go ahead and self-service provision it and have it delivered to them. So what you see here is what we're really dealing with, you know, on day one, and the task here is to map this to Kowali Olay and to understand how these functions are going to continue to get done and even get extended into new service models as we go. So We'd started thinking as a community about how do you do that, and fortunately we have two of our nine partners who have volunteered to go first. And a real tip of the hat to University of Chicago and Lehigh University. That's a big risk to take, but the community is really going to try as much as possible to ensure their success. But they've started doing planning, and in reflecting on this, this is one partner's view, is it's a set of tasks. This is not so uncommon when you think about deploying any kind of large-scale system that you would be doing. There's configuration and data migration, customizations, integrations that you're going to have to do, testing, training of staff, and then eventually you go live. And in order to do that, there's a set of resources that you're going to need to use, and certainly you're going to be using your own staff. So these early adopters are beginning to look at their own staff and figure out what the skill sets are that they're going to need. And in fact, many of us are looking at the skill sets that we're going to need and making sure that the staff that we have either have training, or that as we have opportunities to hire new staff, that we are acquiring the skills that we need. But you can see many of the bullets here on the resource side of the house are coming from the community themselves. The core team, which is employed by the community, is going to be available to these adopters as they move forward. They really have that deep knowledge of how do you configure JackRabbit? What are the hardware requirements for collections your size? What's the scalability of your installation and base configuration? We also have employed over time a number of consultants in our project to help us understand better some of the software that we're using, specifically the Quali Financial system. So we'll most likely see our early adopters appealing to those consultants again to really understand how to configure and tune those systems to get the best performance and response and configuration out of them. Our commercial affiliates within the Quali organization also will be engaged, and there's a host of services that you could imagine them doing for early adopters. Everything from data preparation or migration to configuration, workflow design, planning and project management, or maybe even hosting. But they may do one or two or seven of those. It really is up to how these early adopters are thinking about that. And then the partners themselves. There's lots of software. There's lots of things that the software will do, the Qualiolo software will do. But in the integrations that we'll have to do and in the way we bind it to other systems that we have, the partners will be helping our early adopters directly, because there's a major interlibrary loan system that all of us are using, ILLiad. Once you integrate it, you've integrated it for everybody. So there's no reason that the early adopters necessarily would have to do that work. It would be just as valid and useful if the University of Pennsylvania did that as they were beginning to do those integrations. So we really hope to be able to support the things that are common to all of us across our partnership as our two early adopters go live. So the impact of all of this is that the partners are working together to provide a set of resources and to marshal them towards helping our adopters be successful in their implementations. And of course, this isn't a totally altruistic event. It serves my interest. I'm not an early adopter at the University of Pennsylvania, but as they encounter issues, as they determine how to do certain integrations, this will be helpful to me when I go to do my implementation. And then the only way that that's possible is because the knowledge that is being generated, the understandings and configurations, the patterns that are being seen, are fed back into the community and are available to all of the partners as we go forward. So this is probably a good way to start talking about vended services then, because we are an open source collaborative community doesn't mean that we're against commercial organizations supporting operations that go on within the needs that we have around the software. So we're really seeing that they are part of the community, that they contribute to it in some very real ways, but they don't own the software. So you're not in a situation where you get everything from them. There's some diversity to what's available to you. There's expertise embedded in you know, different companies that have expertise in data migration, for example, or data formatting. There are other companies that are much more full service towards a hosted environment. We have options out there that we're looking into for providing help desk services around the software as well. So there are opportunities for commercial agencies to come up with a line of business or to extend their line of business that they're already in to our software without having to take on all of it. And these are things that we are going to need as we move forward, built around the software. So the Qawwali Foundation, for all of the Qawwali software, has a program called the Qawwali Commercial Affiliates that is a way for commercial interests to join in that community and provide value to the software that is available to all of us and can be seen. It provides, as it says here, diversity of vendors. You don't have to go to the same vendor to get a service. A diversity of service, you don't buy a black box, and there it is, it's Qawwali Olay. If you want to, you can mix and match pieces with vendors who have expertise in different areas. But it also is possible to imagine that a vendor may provide a soup-to-nuts operation as well. And really, you can think about, in those kinds of situations, that these may be the people who bring expertise to the table around multi-tenancy and cloud-hosted services that libraries are likely to want in this sphere. The KCAs also provide an opportunity for meeting unique needs. As a community, we are really looking at how are we similar, not how are we dissimilar, and we find that we're more similar than we are dissimilar. But there are times when, you know, I'm in an Ivy League University of Pennsylvania's, we probably are going to have a need or two that is not shared across our partnership. This gives me an opportunity to be able to go to a commercial affiliate and say, I need this piece of functionality. What does it take to get that? So you can support your unique needs, or you can find that maybe your unique needs aren't that unique, that maybe you can negotiate with like-minded partners and devise a piece of functionality that can be shared across three or four or maybe the entire partnership. And then the commercial activity continues to support the community because, again, the knowledge that's being generated, the services that are being generated, feed back into the community and are available to everyone who is participating. So with this, I'm going to turn it back to Robert.
Thanks, Mike. I put this slide in here because I wanted to talk about it in terms of the overall community collaborative decision-making process. I've been reading a bit about this lately because we've looked at a few things around our agile processes and other ways that we've been working with our vendors, and this is where this came up, and it's a Kanban system that a lot of people talk about how agile was kind of developed from some of the processes that exist there. And these are Toyota's six rules for Kanban, and what I liked about them is the simplicity that they get at with their supply chain lifecycle. And the fact that it, you know, since this crowd's a library crowd, I can talk about Ranganathan's kind of tenets, and they go about the same kinds of, you know, base type of Zen type of thinking around this kind of decision-making process. And what I like here that I wanted to point out, and it kind of goes along with what Mike was just talking about, the subsequent process comes to withdraw only what is needed, and that's talking about the actual piece of a product they need to assemble the whole car, right? But when you think about that from the decision-making process of our reality triangle and the thought process that goes into what's good for my local institution, how does that affect my close collaborative community partners? You know, what is the hybrid decision that's going to be made there? You know, it's that type of simplicity that needs to come back to that reality triangle when making that decision. And it's a very different process for libraries operating with that type of thought process across institutional boundaries. And it's taken, I would say it took at least a year, wouldn't you, Mike, to really get to a point where the groups like the functional council and the board could really get to a point of thinking about that in a way and making decisions in that type of process. But at this point, I think it works pretty well for us. So I just wanted to bring that to mind. We've looked at several different systems like this to think about new ways we could do things or ways we could leverage effectiveness across our institutional boundaries for our libraries. A little bit about the current library management system marketplace, because what I wanted to talk about here is the investment in the community and what we're trying to do with Qawwali Olay, not only in keeping the funds that we're investing, but the staff time and the knowledge that we're investing within the community for a shared process. And this comes from a piece that Marshall Breeding, who's really the big library automation expert for the U.S., has every year. He does an automation marketplace review, and this is from the 2012 one, and I like this quote. He's talking about the marketplace as a whole. A smaller group of larger firms dominate the library automation marketplace. They are largely international, diversified, and privately owned. The mergers and consolidations that have marked the recent history of the industry have absorbed the weaker products and companies. Well, of course, that happens in the marketplace. But then if you look at that as all libraries in the world, that's one thing. But if you look at it as just academic and research libraries, which is the group that we're really working with here in Coalio Lay, you'll notice that, you know, it's not a lot of systems out there. This is looking at new contracts for the year of 2011. But what's really interesting here are the amount of service providers that are creeping into this picture. Before, it was mainly folks selling software and selling support services around software. If you take a look at this, and it's online in the link here, if you can't quite see it from the projector here, but we see at least two other open source library systems, Evergreen and CoHop, which do certain things really well, especially for certain types, I would say, of public libraries. You've got four different companies offering vended systems around that open source software, and that's what we're hoping to get more traction on around what we're doing with Coalio Lay. And that's it's pretty interesting, because with those, you can mix not only the software as a service component of running Evergreen or CoHop for your library, or Coalio Lay for your library, but also with the other types of services those vendors are offering. And, you know, that's the piece that we really want as an option, at least for Coalio Lay, is not to get to a point where we have lots of new, what Marshall Breeding kind of terms as software as a service library management systems that only work in a proprietary type of cloud. We want to be able to mix and match the commodity IT that we need to run the systems when we run them that way, or if we have really large private clouds like IU has, well, I'm going to run lots of my stuff there, right? But either way, I'm not locked in by any type of need to run what I'm doing out in a locked-in cloud. So coming back to that community investment, just to reiterate that point a little bit, whether you're working with a vended library system or whether you're working with an open source one, there's going to require a lot of personnel investment, not only toward making that product better, but also enhancing that product and coming up with local kinds of fixes to make it work in an optimal fashion for your own library. And what we feel we offer with our community, and that's what we really wanted to hit on here today, is a much closer look at our community, is how that large library personnel investment, in fact, when we've done the numbers around this, you know, that usually ends up to be about twice the actual cash or investment that you would make into the software or the service that you're buying from someone, how that goes back into the shared community in a way that's really shared and doesn't get locked into a proprietary type of setup that doesn't let you share it across institutional boundaries. And if that's one thing you could take away from our talk today, I think that would be one of the most important ones. The other big piece that we're seeing, at least in the last year, is a global perspective. We started out working with the Joint Information Systems Committee when we were in our kind of second phase of Olay, working on that build development cycle with our core partners that are around the table now. And at the time, the timing wasn't right. We knew we wanted to do something around life cycle of e-content. So we just kept talking to each other in pretty, I would say it was more cooperative ways than collaborative ways if you're thinking about the Marketecture Matrix. But what it got us to is our first real spinoff grant out of the Coalio Lay partnership, which is called GoKB, and it started up this summer. And it also was funded by Andrew W. Mellon Foundation funds. But the idea there is to take work already being done under the rubric of JISC and JISC collections for e-content management in the UK, and see how that aligns with the work that we wanted to do with Coalio Lay toward providing better e-content management solutions within our software stack. So that's one step forward. And then after we kind of broke the ice there and we were really working together, we actually had dedicated people working on this project week after week, we started making more kind of tractions with other places, not necessarily in North America, but all over the world, and we're starting to see that maybe now is the right time for some of this traction, because everyone is looking for more of this diversity in their ecosystem for their software and opportunity to run things in new ways with new types of commodity IT that are coming into play from a cloud type of operation. The models exist for pure open source libraries, The cultural differences we found in working with several different groups now with lots of different language barriers can be celebrated and leveraged toward making a better product. And if we're looking at the long-term collaboration, we're not out to get all academic or research libraries. We know the sweet number that we need, which will provide sustainability for Olay, and it's not a very much higher number than what you're seeing in our current partnership. But if we add a few more to that from a global perspective, and we make the software work in a way that works across cultural boundaries, I think we'll have a much richer product. The big piece that we have now is to bridge that gap, especially in terms of how we get together and meet face-to-face, because we have found that that's a big part of making these global partnerships work. We do a lot of business through Skype and a lot of business through WebEx and GoToMeeting and so forth, but it's that one or two times a year where you really get together, really get to celebrate the things that are common solutions across all types of libraries, not just U.S. libraries, and that's where we're seeing things go for us. And we see a lot of promise there and a lot of interesting things happening on the horizon there right now. So that really does it for our prepared talk today. But we did want to see if there are any questions from the audience. I have to remind you to please get to the mic since we're broadcasting this, or if you've tweeted some to us or have written them in our Engage page, we'll try to come back to that in a second. Are there questions from the audience from your mic?
At some point in your timeline, I don't know if it's on.
I'll try to repeat it.
At some point in your timeline, do you see K-12 libraries having a role, and are there any other open systems that K-12 folks should be looking at?
I really like that question, and I don't think this mic's on either. I really like that question, and the question was talking about K-12 opportunities for open source solutions. And I think there's a lot of interesting solutions that have been taken advantage of in K-12 right now. There's some really cool tools that have been done to take traditional library records and make them available in Drupal for tagging that I've seen some interesting experiments on. Now, I'm not saying that's the way you would run the library business component of, say, a very large group of, a district or a couple of district types of many, 25, 30 different libraries in a district for doing business. But I could see you taking, especially some of our infrastructure, if that's how you wanted to do purchasing components, and work with something that's more like one of those Drupal types of front ends for your user base, which is K-12, in a new type of way. Now, that being said, it would take a little bit of, personnel investment in the right way to make that happen. But we had some interesting discussions about that at the EDUCAUSE Southeast meeting with some folks who are working on some Department of Ed kinds of things. And they were very interested in how fast, our software was going to be to market so they could try some things like that. Now, that's the thing. We still have a little more time to get our 0.8 out in the spring or early summer of this year. And that's really the one where you could kick the tires, install it, and migrate some of your data and see how that works. But what I do see there is a lot of common solutions in K-12 that could be taken advantage of. So if one place made the move, got the scripts together or the other pieces for the migration components, and you could run the rest of that in a secure cloud that meets the needs of what you would need in a secure cloud for your state or whatever, it would be an easy transition once one group decided to invest or found a partnership that can invest just a little bit, just enough to make that work for them. Mike?
Yeah. Well, let's see if there are other questions.
Could you talk a little bit about your timeline, development timeline? I know you mentioned University of Chicago and Lehigh. Are they talking full implementation, partial implementation, and just in general, timeline? I didn't see it come up here on the board.
Right, so this talk really...
And second question, are you working in any formal way with consortia, especially some of the largest scale consortia? I know you mentioned Florida and some of the schools, but I'm thinking Ohio Link and other kinds of things. What kinds of interaction is there?
Great question. So Timeline. So yes, we're working towards 0.8. Right now, we are saying that that's going to come out June of next year. There's enough of it there that we're already beginning to see that we can stand the software up. The 0.6 release was defined as one that you wouldn't want to, you know, put up locally. There was no way to load your own data into it, and you had to wait until 0.8. But what we've been doing, of course, since our release of 0.6 is working towards that release. So there's enough there that we're finding it possible to go ahead and stand it up and begin doing the planning work and the integration work that you're going to have to be doing. So when that 0.8 release is out, many of us will already have systems that look very close to what that final code base formal release will look like. So University of Chicago, as an early adopter, is already beginning to install and bring that online. And figure out how to do their data integrations and migrate their database. The 1.0 release will follow very shortly after that. That's the one that we essentially call a beta release. It will be the one that the early adopters do implement. And that will come in the third quarter of 2013. And then finishing out our year, because that is the end of our funding, we'll get to 1.5, which is the general release, the one that all of the partners who will implement will go ahead and begin working with that. But again, now that we've reached certain architectural maturity, we're really just writing the code, and as we're writing it, it is available to the partnership, so we're beginning to work with it. So the timelines can compress in some ways because we're beginning to be able to do the planning we need in order to do the implementation and migrations from our current systems. So as the code matures, we'll do a lot more of that work and hopefully be able to make those transitions quickly.
The other question was about consortia, and briefly, the Florida group is really the largest consortia we have in place right now, and that's, Florida State, Florida, FIU, FAU, University of Miami, Rollins College, and Central Florida. And they built their own kind of consortia framework to share information, to participate in the various groups. And that's it's similar to what the University of Maryland's doing, except that they have an aggregated group for the University of Maryland affiliated systems that already pulled money together for the libraries. So what they're doing is having a group of four or five move forward with Olay, and then the rest of theirs are waiting to see about that implementation timeline as to whether they whether that's the solution for them or not. They have about 15, 16 libraries in that consortium. IU has a small consortium of about 8 campuses where we manage everything together. That'll be probably the other type of consortia work that goes on when the current piece. We have a prospective partner that's looking at coming on that would be about 8 different partners of various sizes, different types of libraries, but they already have a service provider where they pull services for parts of that, and that's what they aim to do with it. We had one question online. When do you see, and this is from Tony, and he's at AK Malloy on Twitter, what do you see as the main differences between Qali and other open source ILS options such as Evergreen and Koha?
So our community is one that is focused on academic and research libraries, and typically our collections are beginning to move in very significant ways towards electronic content. Electronic journals have been tipping the balance of our budgets for a number of years now towards the majority of our budget going to acquire electronic content. So resource management of that material is critical to the way Qali Olay is being architected. Additionally, we, as I mentioned earlier, we see an expansion of what libraries, academic libraries, are required to do by their parent organizations, or the economies of collaborating and forming coalitions lead institutions and libraries to think much more about sharing their collections and expediting the sharing of those collections. So these are fundamentally things that academic libraries are concerned with, and we're trying to make sure that our architecture is flexible enough to deal with those new kinds of material that we need to manage within our collections, and that we can incorporate in much more facile ways the inter-institutional relationships that we're finding are critical for our scholars.
All right, any other questions from the room? Well, we're right about it. Time, oh, Jim? That's right. I forgot about that. Paul, who's at ABU Rubin. Sorry, I missed early part of Kuala session at EDU 12. Can you talk more about what is happening in the IDM space for Kuala? And Mike probably knows more about that than I do.
So what I can say is that we're working very closely with Kuala on this. What we're looking for, and I think what Kuala is trying to provide with the identity management system, is a way of incorporating existing systems on your campus. And for libraries, we tend to have multiple authoritative sources of this kind of information, particularly as you begin thinking about consortium or closer partnerships, again, those inter-institutional partnerships, being able to manage identity becomes very difficult across those institutional boundaries. So we need some layer of abstraction there, and this is what we're looking for the Kuala Identity Management System to be able to do for us. At a basic level, you could just understand it as it's federating those systems underneath Kuala so that it can understand that the person who is demanding a service actually does have a role, even though they're not a member of your institution, a role that can be provisioned and serviced within the Kuala OLE software stack.
Great. Well, I think that brings us to a close today, and thanks for everybody online and all your great questions on Twitter and in our Engage page, and I'll follow up with some of you in the Engage page that start your questions later. Please remember to come to the Kuala Foundation reception tonight and also attend the Community Projects Pilot tomorrow if you're interested in more about community software in the higher ed enterprise. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.